Welcome back to The Evolution of a Snake. I'm Zach.
And I'm Madeline.
And this is our weekly, or actually monthly, call-in segment, Phone a Snake, where you call the world's most useless hotline and get thoughts, opinions, feelings, advice from two raccoons in a clown car.
Mm-hmm. It's great.
That's what it is.
That's what it is.
And you're listening to the public version of this, which is, you know, a decent length of time, but there is an extended version of this episode with juicier questions behind the paywall. Patreon.com/cryptologist. You want to hear about Mason, Madeline's husband? You're going to have to wait until we get into the behind the scenes. You want to hear what we have to say to our past Swifty selves, advice we might have for them? You're going to have to wait until we get to the Patreon. So stay tuned for that. Sign up. If you're not there, what are you doing?
Exactly.
Come on.
It's embarrassing at this point.
We can't keep shaking the cup like this. But we will. Won't stop us.
We're never going to stop, mind you. But
rattle, 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 clang, rattle, clang, rattle, clang. Rattle. So let's get right into it. Also, you can't submit unless you're a patron. So if you need to be heard, if you need to be seen by two snakes, come on. Come on.
It's happening again.
Here we go. Let's start with our very first question of the day.
My second question is, do you guys feel like So Long London should have been the track five choice? Obviously, we know Taylor's awareness of the track five has kind of been its downfall in some ways, but I do feel like maybe there could have been some other contenders from the album. A more obvious one would have been maybe like LOML. Or even a non-romantic based option. Like Who's Afraid of Little Old Me? I know that's more of an angry song, but I kind of felt like it would be interesting to have something that's not just about a relationship as a track five from her. What do you guys think? Was there a better option for this set list?
It has to be about a relationship. We have to start there.
And you know what? Something else. I'm a So Long London truther, and I say track five. I'm a truther.
Oh, you do?
I do. I appreciate and I get it, and I see the vision, and I say thank you.
I can accept it as a track five. At first, I wasn't happy with it, but it has slowly started to destroy me the longer that I've listened to it. Mm. It is traumatic, but I will say that in my reshuffled version of Torture Poets, which is coming out today, a long time later from whenever you're listening, that version, I put So Long London as the opening track because I feel like that's really where we start our story. Like we start with So Long London, truly. And my track five, I think that I put there was actually But Daddy, I Love Him. Because to me, a track five is a really like ridiculous, ostentatious, like just elaborately written song that elicits a strong emotion from you. And I think that So Long London is like very beautifully constructed and very intentional and careful. So I feel like the options that I would have maybe put there instead would have been But Daddy, I Love Him, LOML. It's a bit too obvious for me. I think The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived is probably, in the history of the canon, the track five.
Yeah, I think like the most obvious track five, like if I was Taylor and I was thinking, okay, previous track fives, All Too Well, Dear John, if there's a song like that on Torture Poets, it is Smallest Man Who Ever Lived. But that said, So Long London truther.
This mama gets it. She understands.
I also don't think that Taylor being aware of the track five thing is its downfall. I think the only time it was its downfall was on Lover, because she really, really tried to write one and she didn't have one. I think that's the truth.
Ever since, it's been a good success. I mean, Tolerate It, My Tears Ricochet, You're On Your Own Kid. Those are all good track fives.
I think like she stopped like forcing it, and she would sit down now and look at her songs and be like, that one's track five. And that's the right way to do it. That is the right way to do it.
Well, the one album where she didn't try and she didn't force it was 1989. That album, she was like, I'm not even really doing a track five. She was like, I don't care.
Right.
Because all you had to do was stay.
And that's on period.
I mean, it's true.
And it is true.
But it's not a track five.
Exactly. So there you go.
Up next. You're welcome for answering your question about the song So Long London.
Hey, snakes. It's Candace. Madeline, I hope you're feeling better. I have it's in honor of So High School. So two Mary Kiss Kills or Mary Fuck Kills, whatever you want to call them. So the first one's going to be, I'm sorry in advance, Mary Fuck Kill Scooter Scott. Or Justin Bieber. You're welcome. And then this one's going to be a little bit more torture poets. So Mary Fuck Kill But Daddy I Love Him, Down Bad, and Chloe or Sam or Sophia or Marcus.
Interesting. I'll start with the songs because I feel like I'll forget them if we don't do them. But Daddy I Love Him, Chloe or Sam or Sophia or Marcus, and what was the other one? I've completely forgotten it. Why
Chloe or Sam
goldfish?
Chloe or Sam, but Daddy I Love Him.
You just heard
him.
That part and
down
you were
bad,
like
down bad, down bad,
down bad, down bad.
That's what okay. It was. That's
oh
what
my
it
God.
Was.
Wow. easy for me. I would marry But Daddy I Love Him. I would fuck Down Bad and I would kill Chloe or Sam or Sophia Marcus. Thank you.
So I would marry Chloe or Sam or Sophia or Marcus.
Mm-hmm. As you should.
I quit. I'm out.
You
Thank
quit.
You. I quit. I'm
you
not doing that.
I mean, how do you kill But Daddy I Love Him? You can't. You just can't.
It can't be done. And then the other one was Justin Bieber, Scott Borchetta, and Scooter Braun.
Ew, ew, ew. I'm always killing Scooter Braun. Like, that's on period. I'll fuck Justin Bieber. That's not hard. It's not ideal, but it's not that hard. Marrying Scott Borchetta, however, is maybe I would fuck Scott Borchetta so that I could marry Justin Bieber. But I think that Justin Bieber is like a severely damaged person. So I think being married to him might be worse than being married to Scott.
Well,
he's pretty to look at.
At least Scooter Braun has money. So I'm going to marry him and then I'm going to kill him. Yes, I'm going to take his money.
Marry and kill him. Okay, sure. Yeah.
That can be done.
Course,
it's called the Black Widow effect. I would definitely, I would fuck Justin Bieber. I mean, at least he's like a pop star. Or he was.
A person.
A person. And then I would kill Scott Borchetta. There you go.
Well, he deserves to be killed. I shouldn't say that. But what if I mean it? What if I mean it? What then?
But what if they
just
did?
Just kidding. I guess we're going to have to move on from that. Thank you for your question, Candace.
Hi, snakes. It's Miranda. I have like a two-part question based around Taylor's creative process. So feel free to answer one or both. But I'm curious just to hear your thoughts on number one. How do you think Taylor's creative process has changed over the years and what has stayed the same? What things have been tried and true? And how have we noticed her growth and evolution over the years? And then the second part is, I know that she keeps things in the vault. We know this. But do you ever think that she has songs in the vault that she's never released that are exceptional, but they're just far too personal that she would never release? Because she's so good at being willing to be vulnerable. I just wonder if even she has a line of vulnerability or what topics you think she would not release a song about, no matter how good it was, just because of the topic or person.
Very interesting questions. Mm-hmm. I think the second question, I really go back and forth with that because obviously like strategic vulnerability is what Taylor practices. She's not going to be vulnerable if it doesn't end up serving a higher purpose. Like she's not just going to be like, I'm sad because of this. If there's no point, if that makes sense, like there needs to be some gain for her to get from being vulnerable. Otherwise, like she's not just going to open her heart to the world. But then again, like I hear a song like Soon You'll Get Better. And I'm kind of like, that song didn't have to be on Lover and it doesn't kind of 100% fit on Lover. And it is very vulnerable to the point where she like can't really perform it live, but she put it out because I guess like it needed to be in the world for someone else to relate to it. So I feel like, does she have these amazing songs in the vault that she's keeping to herself? I think that when they're that good, that's when she's going to be vulnerable. If there's anything in the vault, I feel like it might be vulnerable and not good.
That's what I was thinking too. I think the if there's any song that's like too vulnerable, I think if it was really that good, it would be edited so that it could be released. Mm-hmm. That's what I really think. And then I think anything that she's just not releasing, there's always reasons for it, and they're not usually just because it's too vulnerable. There's like, you know, there can't be two All Too Wells on one record, that kind of a reason, or there can't be this, or there can't be that, or it just didn't fit, or et cetera, et cetera. But not usually like it's too real, because, mm-hmm. you know, if it's too real,
her whole thing is being real.
Exactly. So, yeah.
And yeah, she has to kind of bare her soul like that from time to time. I mean, Torture Poets is a great example of, you know, perhaps oversharing.
She loves to do it. And meanwhile, at midnight,
you shouldn't say.
The exact opposite. There was no oversharing.
Midnights was literally ChatGPT Taylor Swift, if you really think about it.
If you think about it. And there are some really good songs on Midnights, but it was in code.
Of course, but it wasn't a vulnerable album at all. There was nothing vulnerable about it. It was defensive, actually. It was a defensive album. I think, what was the first question? How has Taylor's creative process changed? What has stayed the same? What's gotten better? Well, as we know, she's in her maximalist era. She is free from the constraints. I think, again, what's really interesting to me, and I wish she would talk more about this, is it seems like her relationship with Big Machine was a lot more contentious than she has ever let on. And she's kind of slowly starting to talk about that now. What upset me so much was when she said that she felt like her first six records were overthought. And I was kind of like, okay, but now we're doing an overcorrection to that. Like, your first six records were statements. Each of them is its own thing and has its own message, and they are all great. I don't think any of them suffered for being overthought, especially when you look at the vault tracks. Pretty much every single one, I could see why it was left off. So I'm like, that overthinking something is not always a bad thing.
I agree. I do think that there are some records, like, for example, Red. I think Red was kind of a really – she – put a lot on there, and at this point, because I've sat with it for so long, there's pretty much nothing that I would really take off it at this point, just because it's been with me for so long, and I think every song has its purpose, but it is quite long. And I think that back then, like when it first came out, I was like, I would take like four songs off this motherfucker, especially with the deluxe tracks, you know what I mean? So I don't think that like it was always like there's an album like 1989 where it needs to be very, very concise. But then, by contrast, an album like Folklore, it's long, but it doesn't feel bloated the way that perhaps Lover felt bloated, because she was kind of throwing things at the wall, if that makes any sense. And I feel that way about Midnights as well. I think that there's kind of like two sides to the coin, where it's like sometimes an album really does need to be long. I would argue that for Torture Poets Main. But then she went the anthology. And even though there are songs on the anthology that I absolutely love and I would not give away for anything in the world, I do think that it kind of bloats Tortured Poets. And
it diluted the message.
It diluted it just a little bit. And I think that if she had released it later, it probably wouldn't feel like that. But since she released it at the same time, it kind of did. And like, I'm never going to complain about having more food, mind you. Mm-mm. Delicious. I was eating it up. I was gobbling. I mean, I had two straight days of reacting to albums. So that was like incredible. But you know what I mean? It was just a little bit too much.
System overload. And I think also her creative process has become less about making the best thing and making the most stuff. Like, that's what it's kind of veering towards now. It's like, if I write through enough things, I will find the really good stuff. But in that process, there is a selection element that is now missing. It's like, okay, yes, write it all, get it all out. But then we need to be getting the pop star brain on and going, what do I want to say? Because a lot of the problem with Torture Poets as well, of people not getting it, and a lot of people are like, well, it's fine if only Swifties get it. And it's like, actually, like, no, Taylor Swift is a legacy artist. Like, we should be thinking about like how we're going to interact with this work later on. What are we going to think about it? I think the really good parts about Torture Poets were overshadowed by the bloat. And that's the whole reason why bloat is bad.
Right. And there's something to be said about editing. There's really something to be said. I think it's an art to be able to edit well. When you can edit yourself, I think that that's a skill. And I think that I think she has the skill. But she has forsaken it. Why have you forsaken me? And I think that if I don't want to, we just got Church of Poets. I'm not saying that we need a new album, but like for the next album, if she's going to do like a whole new album in the next 2 years, I think that she should try to do a concise album that's really to the point. And that's what I hope. And there you go.
I think she will. also because the trend in the industry seems to be veering more towards shorter, concise albums, yeah. which I like. And Taylor is receptive to criticism. She is receptive to criticism. Let's actually, there's a question about criticism. Why don't we just like skip straight into that since we're here. We're gabbing about criticism anyway.
Hey, Snakes, it's Maya. Gotta go really quick because I only have a minute. Let me cook. I don't understand the mixed reception of Tortured Poets, like, and how everyone reacted really positively to Midnights. It's very confusing because I feel like in terms of quality and cohesiveness, Midnights is really similar to Lover, while TPD is really similar to Reputation. I can't unpack that all now, but you can for me. Thank you. Also, it's weird that people say her writing is really cringy now and that it's, like, new for her and she's trying really hard because, like, she's always been writing really strange. Like, Corey's eyes are like a jungle. Now, come on now.
Period.
Anyway, love you guys. Listen to you probably way too much. And I sound like a 10-year-old ranting, but I'm not, I promise.
That gagged me. Also, that wasn't the criticism question I meant to play. There's two.
Well, I heard but it.
I loved the delivery of that. Hi, I have to make this really fast. I have a lot to say. I've got to get through it. Here I go.
So the first thing I'm going to respond to is the last thing she said where people are saying, oh, she writes weird now. No. No, mm-mm. She doesn't. This is the same nut job that was present on debut, Fearless. I would say that, like, if you're asking me, I think Midnights, a lot of the main tracks on the main edition of Midnights were really edited lyrically. Like, they didn't have the same psychosis because they were very much, like, behind a curtain.
It was simple.
If that makes any sense.
It was
simple.
Very easy to get. Yeah.
Right.
And now it's easy to get or so vague that there was nothing to get. Like, there wasn't a lot of guesswork that needed to be done. And I think that was by design, if we're being real.
Right.
But yeah, now, I mean, also the critics have been said, there was one critic that was like, Taylor is overly focused on love and marriage and happy endings on this record to its detriment. And I was like, what Taylor Swift are you listening to? Because her entire thing is love, everlasting love. The pursuit of it is her muse. So I'm like, why are you you're just making stuff up at this point.
It's like, and it's not a secret because back in the day, she used to be, it's the same criticism. It's the same fucking criticism from Fearless. It's the same criticism.
But
Speak Now, Red. It's the same.
In one breath, how can you say All Too Well is her best song ever and then say that it is to her detriment that she focuses on romantic relationships?
Exactly.
Like, hello,
and
the
it's
call
unfair.
Is coming from inside the house.
She has spent so much time, I think, really pushing herself to write about things other than love, just to break
a
away
lot.
From that. A lot. She does
a
it
lot.
All the time. Every record, there's multiple songs that have nothing to do with any guy or any relationship or any pining or anything.
Karma,
etc., etc. Like, I don't. I think it's unfair, and I think it's reductive, and I think it's rude,
misogynistic.
Yes. I'll say it. Sexist.
Actually, let me try and play the other criticism question that I was trying to play before we got waterboarded by a queenie who just had a lot to say.
Hey, Snakes. I send in a question like every phone snake, so if I don't get picked this time, I'm going to be really upset about it.
Not a threat.
Anyway.
We're getting school shooter.
So in the wake of all the Tortured Poets criticism and noise online, some of it valid, a lot of it just like ridiculous and stupid and annoying. I'm wondering how you guys like process criticism of Taylor. We haven't seen it in a while, pretty much ever since Folklore. Things have been like, everything she's doing is perfect and amazing, but it seems like the tides are kind of turning again. I'm wondering what you guys think that means for her, if that's really actually going to affect anything or if everything's just going to be the same for her creative process and her output. And how do you guys process criticism when you listen to Taylor's work? Can you kind of like turn it off and just choose to enjoy it? Does it get in your mind and annoy you? What's it like? Thank you.
I think it's great that she's getting criticism because, I mean, I don't think a lot of it is unwarranted, but there are the main criticism is that the bloat is too much. And that is the right criticism to have of the album. Like, that is the note that she needs to take from doing all of this. So I think like Taylor does listen to reviews, whether or not like she is so big that she can't be criticized. It seemed like at this point, critics were willing to go there and they were not scared to because most of the reviews were pretty critical. I think when that was worst was during Midnights. That's when I was like, what the hell is going on? Because it got really glowing and effusive reviews. And I was like, this doesn't make sense. Like, it's, that's not matching up with the quality of what we're receiving. So it worried me then, but now I'm kind of like, okay, we're back. It's too much in the opposite direction, but there are notes to take that I think she will take.
I would like to think for myself that when it comes to criticism about Taylor, I like to think that I can take it in, and I would like to think that I can read it and I can know what's true and I can know what's just kind of hateration. I would like to think that. I don't think that I read every single critical piece and think, you're just a hater. I don't think I do that. Hopefully I don't. I mean, I don't know. Like I said, for Torture Poets, I really haven't been engaging with a lot of it because I'm also aware of when I'm not really ready. You know what I mean? Like, I'm really enjoying Torture Poets, and it's not that like a critical like response to Torture Poets would ruin it for me or anything like that. It's just like, I don't really want it. I'm not really,
you're not interested.
You know what I mean?
You're not in a place of that.
Right. I will eventually like get into it and see what people think. I know the main criticisms of the album. I just haven't sat down and read an article and like really thought about it. But as for like, do I ever think about criticism when like I'm listening to a song? Every time I listen to How Did It End, I think about what Zach said about it, about how it's overwritten.
Oh no.
I know that it's true. And this is an example where it's like, yeah, but I love it. So it doesn't ruin it for me at all.
It does pop into my mind. There are certain songs like Who's Afraid of Little Old Me? After I kind of formulated my opinion that this is actually a badly written song, whenever I listen to it now, I'm like, eek. I don't turn it up very often. However, My Boy Only Breaks His Favorite Toys is also kind of clumsily written. But when I listen to it, I'm like, yes,
I love,
thank you.
I love My Boy Only Breaks
His
Favorite
ears.
Toys. And I'm turning
I love
it up.
Her.
Love it.
And also, and conversely as well, like different things will change the way you interact with the song. My opinion on Who's Afraid of Little Old Me is now slightly more positive because of it being on the Eras Tour and I like the performance of it. So things like that, they shift around. Like your opinions are never set in stone. And I think it's just important to like just be tuned in to like your gut feeling. Like I knew when I heard I'm Gonna Get You Back that I loved that song. And no matter what anyone said about it, they thought it was weird or cringe or whatever. I did not even hear the Olivia Rodrigo comparison. And I was shocked when people were making it and then also saying how bad it was in comparison to that. And that has not changed my enjoyment of the song at all.
That's such an unfair comparison too. Like, I'm Gonna Get You Back is not one of my favorites, but bad in comparison to Get Him Back, it's like, well,
they're different.
They're different, and there's nothing wrong with that. I don't like, can't two,
they were completely different.
We all got crowned, god damn it. Shade never made anybody less gay. What
it
happened to
never
that?
Did
it never
and
did.
Yet nobody ever wants to let her god damn rock.
Exactly.
It's just not fair. It's literally just not fair. Why don't we leap into yet another question from a member?
Hey guys. I'm sorry in advance if you guys get this question multiple times, but I feel like for Tortured Poets in the anthology, there was like an overwhelming negative reaction from the general populace. And it just seems like there's so many criticisms of Miss Swift out there. Like, just like completely disregarding the music, and it just is like so overwhelming. And maybe I'm just like in an echo chamber on socials, but like I wasn't on social media like 2014, 15, or 16. So like I was there, but I wasn't there. So like, I guess from your perspective, how is this like different or similar?
Like criticism different or similar? Like different or similar to past
eras?
Or
how people are responding to it. Yeah,
well,
to past eras,
I mean,
I
we got into this earlier. They were sucking Midnights off like a popsicle. We knew that. Even 1989 TV, the Taylor's versions is the effusive praise that I
was
really
delusional.
Was like,
that was really
come
delusional.
On, guys. No. Like, be real.
You know it's bad.
You know
this is bad.
And it's like, I can take in, oh, this is a great project. Like, this is an important project. Absolutely. This is a great project. But, like, we need a but. But there's never a but. There's never
we
a but. It's
line.
Always like, we love... I wonder, by the way, something to think about, how are they going to receive Rep TV? Because I think Rep is kind of like... I hate to say it, but I think
it's on the
like,
block.
It's a local...
It's going to be the worst one to
right,
re-record.
And it's like a local album, too. I think a lot of people who are, you know, quote-unquote casual listeners or people who are just on the outskirts of the fandom are fans of Reputation. Because I think it's kind of really digestible. Like, when I compare it to a lot of the other stuff, it didn't seem like it at the time, but it's aging kind of well and, like, people respond to it. So it's like, I think they're going to rip that one a new one. And
It's Taylor's bad bitch era. And like that is very in vogue at the moment, right, to like be a bad bitch. So I think people will respond well to that. And like just the darker, edgier visuals, they'll like it. I think when I think about how people, critics and the public responded, because I think part of the question here is about like, how are the public responding to this album? And I think always we magnify the criticism and we don't like pay as much attention, yeah, to the praise, because, right, when we're looking at praise, Taylor always gets more praise than criticism, always. So I think in general, like the Swifties and the people who this album is for love it. Like they love it, and people are turning up Down Bad. People are listening to Fortnite. Like the public is enjoying this record. I think they're probably not engaging with it as much as they did with other ones, just because it's difficult and like hard to access. But it was a world stop moment when it came out, truly. And like, we don't get a lot of album world stop moments that carry on for a long period of time. So that's interesting. And back in the day as well, like, we're in a place now where Taylor Swift is considered a serious and good enough artist to have everyone want to have a take on it. Back in the day, it was hard to get anyone to even take the work seriously enough to review it. Like Speak Now, Red, people didn't care. Like Taylor was not an impactful artist in the wider scheme of things to tastemakers back then. It was really only with 1989 that we saw her start to get picked up. And they didn't like Reputation either, or Love Her.
No, it wasn't until Folklore, and it's really a goddamn shame. I mean, there's a lot we could, I mean, of why that may be, but I think with the younger albums, it's different now because I feel like because of Taylor Swift, we have so many young girls who can come out and make music, and Olivia Rodrigo, I think she gets reviewed pretty widely. Oh, I think people engage with her
and
art
generously.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And they take it seriously, right, and they don't consider her age as a limiting factor to her making good work, which
whereas
was
with
always
Taylor,
Taylor's barrier for entry. It was like, she's a young girl, therefore
in that sense that Taylor kind of like broke that barrier, I think, for a lot of the young girls, which she's never really getting enough like flowers for this, because she endured like kind of like constant abuse for like 6-7 years, if not more than that, in terms of critical regard, of just being like,
shut doors,
this is music for little girls, this is music for little girls, and not being taken seriously for a long time, and kind of like she walked so Olivia Rodrigo could run in that specific regard. So I haven't thought about that in a very long time, how people wouldn't even take her music seriously. Now, because now I don't have to, because now it's like everybody knows all
or
the eras. And
it would be like, this is good for a teenage girl. It could never just be, this is good. It had to be qualified by, for a teenage country artist, for little girls who will love this song, et cetera, et cetera. Her catalog really, like, albums like Speak Now didn't get their dues until Speak Now Taylor's Version came around and critics were forced to assess it again and then be like, oh, this was really quite the achievement. And like Pitchfork didn't even deign to review Taylor until a man had made an entire album covering her work.
Right.
That's
Brian Adams. It's disgusting. It's shocking. And 1989. And what he did to 1989 was appalling. And they said clap, clap, clap. Yeah.
A crime.
It was disgusting.
It was literally, I mean, it was just something that was in different areas and not in a good way.
Not in a good way.
Here's another question for the culture.
Hi, Zach and Madeline. My question is, if you could add any Taylor Swift debut song to the set list of the Eras Tour, which songs would you add, and what would the sets look like? What would the costumes look like? And what would the choreography be?
He wants us to dance. He wants us to get our asses up and dance. Well, the first thing that I'm sure came to both of our minds was our song. And we need the florals. We need the flowers. We need the orange gown. We need the florals. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Our song, Picture to Burn.
Headset mic with a guitar walking around. Why not?
Should have said no. I think our song, Picture to Burn, Should Have Said No, is a really good debut set. Teardrops, if she has time. But, you know, I can take it. I get it. It's not like a big moment, so fine. But those three,
Teardrops,
I think, are really solid.
Take that back. Teardrops is a big moment, and it should be
All
Too Well.
I'm saying, like,
it should be on a podium, 10-minute version, big dress.
Well, sure, absolutely. But I'm saying, like, in terms of like doing the stadium set,
I would love it to be a little bedroom, like on the diamond, a little bedroom,
be so
like kind of like the teardrop set with like an open window and the curtains like blowing. I think that would be so cute. Our song, Teardrops starting, then going into Our Song for like a little bit of blue in your hair for the Teen Vogue party has to be. And then I think a Should Have Said No, Picture to Burn mashup would be really fun.
Oh, go crazy. I can't believe she's never done that before.
If she loved us, she would give us a little I'd Lie.
Oh, just a taste. Just a taste. They can't hit you with copyright if it's live and if it's different enough.
No, they can't.
They can't. They just
mash it up. Just give us a line. Do what you did with So High School and give us a chorus of I'd Lie.
Can you imagine if she ever did it as a surprise song? Does she know that we know?
I would pass
I would literally
away.
Go into – I think that's the last surprise song she could possibly
Witness
do at this
protection.
Point that would send me into
well, hoax.
A tailspin.
Hoax hasn't been done yet. Don't
and
forget.
And it won't.
You're always,
I know the truth.
You're
I know
always
the truth.
At risk of being hoaxed. Has she done Peace? She did do Peace, right? She did that in Australia.
Actually,
honestly.
I don't know.
Did she?
I don't know. Huh. Like, I don't know if she did.
Interesting. Well, that's how we would do the debut set.
Yeah.
And here's another question.
Hi, Snakes. So obviously Tortured Poets Department has solved a lot of mysteries and provided a lot of context for all of Taylor Swift's albums, really from Reputation onwards. And so my question is, has this new information significantly changed how you feel about any of Taylor Swift's previous albums to the point where you might actually change your rankings? I'm thinking in particular about Midnights, but I think this could apply to anything from Reputation onwards. Just curious to know your thoughts. Cheers.
Interesting question.
So wait, what is she asking? So
she's basically asking like if Torture Poets being what it is, right. Has our album ranking changed? Do we
I
view any of the
question.
Discography differently?
Queen.
It's too soon. Honestly,
too soon.
It is too soon. But
I see some people going, Torture Poets number one. I'm like, yeah, that's
okay,
not true.
Let's just relax. Let's not be crazy.
Relax. Let's relax.
In terms of things that it has surpassed for me already, Lover, easily. Debut,
yes.
Easily. Midnights, cleared. Everything else is a question mark for me. Is it coming for either Reputation or Evermore in my ranking somewhere? Not for you, but for me, it could potentially. Could it? I mean, 1989 is just such a hard one to rank because like it's its own thing and it's perfect. But it's like I'm not as emotionally attached to it as I am to other albums, but I can't rank it low. So it's hard for me to move 1989, Speak Now, and Red around. Like it is hard for me to jiggle those ones up and down. But I actually, yeah, TTPD is my, I'm liking it more and more as I listen to it.
My tea is that I think I've reached the point where I can't rank them anymore.
Yeah.
I can't do it. I tried it recently before
What's
Torture
the point?
Poets. I struggled. I was like, I don't even know if this is true. I'm out.
They're all my children.
I'm out.
They are literally my babies. I can't rank them.
I think
Does
if
it
I was
make
gonna
me
do
look
it...
at anything differently? I don't know. A lot of people are saying it's changed Folk Evermore for them. To know the Maddie of it all. I don't care about that.
Yeah, that doesn't really change the album for me, though. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't... Jover didn't really change Folk Evermore to me either. I was
no.
just like, well, it's still the album, right? Like, I don't understand what
it
people say.
It did change
say.
Midnights for me, actually. Jover changed Midnights for me in a positive way. It made me create a layer of subtext to it that was not present on my initial listen.
Well, it definitely made more sense. I will say that. It made it make a lot more sense. I was like, oh, so that's the whole thing of a bobber. But otherwise, yeah, I don't – I think if I were to rank them now, it wouldn't be like an actual like, this is number one, this is number two. I think it would be like, here's my God tier and here's the other ones. You know, like not –
What's your God tier? Is TTPD in there yet?
Maybe. I can only say other ones would be Lover – I don't even know if I can put Debut down there, though, because it's like, well, she's not other. She's
debut,
just
I just don't
different.
Rank Debut. This is the
she's
thing.
Just
she's
different.
Herself. It's not fair to compare. Also, when you think about how crazy it is to compare Debut and Torture Poets, like those are different artists. Like,
it's not.
Different people.
I was thinking about that just the other day, and I was thinking about like Taylor as like Debut Taylor. And I was like, you know, it's kind of crazy. All these people who like really love Taylor and have been with her for even like 5, 6, 7, 8 years now who never knew that little girly. But I did. It's weird.
And the thing is, it's hard to know that specific girly, debut
right.
girly, in hindsight. It is hard to know her.
She's
unknowable.
She's unknowable. Good for her.
Not to us. Not to us. We'll keep her.
We'll keep her.
We'll keep her locked inside our basement.
Yep.
Here is another, this question made me lol so bad. I'm very curious to hear your take.
Hi, Madeline and Zach. It's Susanna here. I just wanted to ask you, if Taylor Swift wasn't Taylor Swift, if she ended up being a stockbroker like she used to want to be, what sort of Swiftie do you think she would be? Do you think she would be like a so-called cupcake Swiftie? Do you think she would like watch Chats and Reacts, or do you think she would watch The Cricket and Lizard? Do you think she would watch The Swiftologist? Would she be attending 10,000 Ears shows, or would she just go to one? Yeah, what do you think?
She would not be a Swiftologist, I can tell you that. She would not be a Swiftologist.
That's a really interesting question. And it's like hard to know, because we don't even really necessarily have like a good example of what Taylor would be like, even just as a fan. Because all of her, like, I'm such a fan, it always seems to be coming from a place of like, but are you, do you know everyone. What I mean? Yeah, it's like,
yeah, with Justin Timberlake, it's very like surface level. I can see her as being one of those like girlies that works a corporate job and like has a Stanley Cup collection and is like, I love Taylor Swift, and like gets tickets to the Eras Tour and wears like just a shiny dress and like sings along to her favorite songs, but then goes home and doesn't think about it until the next concert or like whatever. Like, she's not like tuned in. I think that could be her. But I also think in her nerdier ways, she could be one of those literary Swifties that's like, this is what you didn't miss about like the Virginia Woolf reference on like Ivy, whatever it is. Like, I could see her doing that.
Oh, yeah, no,
like,
that's actually
doing those,
really
like,
good read.
Explaining the meaning of a song, and the explaining the meaning is like, this is why Holy Ground is Holy Ground. Like, something really fucking obvious.
But it's like also because like, if Taylor Swift wasn't Taylor Swift, who would she have wound up with romantically? Would she be married by now? Would she have a family? Would she be doing this, that, or the other? You know, it's like interesting to think about, because I mean, she thinks that she's cursed because of her career, and I mean, it's kind of tea. So it's like, well, she is very romantically inclined, and I think that she does have the bewitching element to her. So I think people are interested in her, and she definitely would have, you know, dated around and then finally settled down, et cetera, et cetera. Found the one, if you will. So it's like, is she doing the family girly thing? But then it's like, once the kid has grown up, then she's like, okay, now I'm doing my own thing. And what am I doing? Am I going to Taylor Swift shows? Am I even a Swiftie? It's like,
it's so hard to understand.
It's too much. It's like, would she be a fan of herself if she wasn't her? Or would she be like a caramelizer? Would she be an Arianator? She would be like an Ariana Grande stan. We don't even know.
I could honestly see her being a fucking Belieber. She's like down bad for men. Like, she would definitely be standing Harry Styles.
She was
Styles.
A One Direction fan.
There we
fan.
Go.
We know that. One
she would be a Harry fan.
She's a Directioner.
She'd be a Harry.
We figured
She's a
it
directioner.
Out. She's a Harry.
She would love it.
She would have
She's
loved
a Harry.
That.
She would
did.
Be at all of the Love on Tour shows in Madison Square Garden.
Oh, yeah.
She would have
She's,
a cowboy hat
just,
and a boa on,
yeah.
and yep. she'd be screaming.
Yep. We cracked the code. We know exactly
we,
who she
we
is.
We clocked it.
We got her number.
We clocked that tea. I also think in terms of like how who would she be with if she wasn't famous, and like what would her life look like, I think that Taylor like actually enjoys gender roles a lot more than she would let on. Like, I think that she likes to be treated well by a man. I think she likes chivalrous actions. I think she's interested in that. So I think the goth punk moments of female rage would be few and far between.
Well, here's the tea is that so am I. People wouldn't think so, but I am. I do not take the trash out. I will not.
It's
that's
not
man's
for you.
Work. That's man's work.
You're a girl.
And that's period. And I expect I expect certain treatment.
My door must be open.
Exactly. So I'm sort of kin with that, with her, like, and it's like really clear when you think about like her writing and the way that she writes, and he opens the door,
also
he calls when he says
she's
he will
selecting
exactly
to date at
like,
this point.
I think it's kind of like an interesting like dichotomy to be like, well, I'm such a radical feminist, or not, excuse me, I always say that it's an old term. I'm not a radical feminist. What I mean is I'm such an intense feminist, and also at the same time I refuse to take out the trash. I won't do it.
Well, also when we look at like, I think the best harbinger of who Taylor would have been had she not been famous is probably her earliest work, like debut Fearless, and that is all about men please treat me right. Save me.
And she's still doing it. Would she get, remember when she used to introduce Betty? I don't think she does this anymore, but she used to introduce it like, this is how I would want to be apologized to. Like, I wrote it to like explain to men how to apologize. And it's like, okay.
Well,
She Love Actually. She likes romantic comedies. She likes the idea of a Prince Charming, et cetera, et cetera. And she wrote a song called London Boy. I feel positive about that.
Yeah. I feel positive love that for her. About that. Let's do one more before we switch into our paywalled portion of this beautiful Gorgina Phone a Snake episode. One more little ditty.
Hi, snakes. So I know you guys aren't really big fans of Florida, but I was wondering what your thoughts were on Florence Welch specifically, or like Florence and the Machine as a whole outside of Florida, because I know that's like this. In my opinion, Taylor and Florence were never two people I would really put together, because like they have such different energies. It's like kind of insane. But anyway, yeah, I was just wondering what your thoughts were on them.
Well, I love listening. I think we feel the same way.
Trying to end their questions, they're just like, okay, thanks.
Yeah,
it's like, hi. Yep.
I could also hear Taylor playing in the background, and I was trying to figure out what song was playing, but I couldn't hear.
Let me tell you, Lungs, greatest album ever made. I'll say it. I'm not scared. When I went to in my high school, all of the girls were obsessed with Florence Welch, and so was I. Drumming Song, ever heard of it? Howl, greatest song ever made. Hurricane Drunk, greatest song ever made. But I don't know any of those songs. Lungs is so good. If I had to recommend a Florence and the Machine record, it would be Lungs, hand over fist.
I only know the big ones, so like Dog Days Are Over, You've Classic. Got the Love.
Oh, I hate that song.
Shake It Out. These songs are like, to me, they're euphoric, and I would enjoy singing them in a throng of people at a festival, but this is not the kind of music that I turned up. The one album of hers that actually piqued my interest, weirdly, I think is something that people generally don't like. It's How Big, How Blue, How Beautiful.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I like mm-hmm. that album. I thought there were some really good, like, quieter moments. I don't like the whole, it's just not really for me. It's not my thing. I like Shipwreck.
He's wrong.
yeah, it's just not, my
what's
vibe.
What's the name of that other one? Is it Lungs? And then it's
Ceremonials.
It's called, like, Ceremonials. That one was also pretty good. That one was a good record, but most of the stuff after that is not really for me, including her most recent record. It's just not for me. It just, maybe I grew out of it.
It's kind of veering into mom music in a way. I don't mean to be insulting, but I think that's kind of, she occupies a similar territory to Pink in a different way.
Jesus
for a different
Christ.
Kind of mom, but it's a similar thing. It's like the boho chic mom. The mom with the sundresses and the hats and the
crystals. Well,
yeah, because
I think a lot of those girlies that I went to high school with are now mothers. And as far
there
as
you
I know,
go.
They're still listening
and they're
to
they're still turning
the
it
machine,
up.
And that's good for them. I'm happy for them.
I would never have paired them together as a collaboration. I just wouldn't have picked that.
And I would have gone a different direction for what they ultimately wound up doing. I think I would have gone a different
direction. It doesn't sound particularly Taylor Swift or particularly Florence and the Machine. And to that I say, why?
Well, Jack was in the room and he was hitting the bong and he was going, have you guys ever been to Destin? And they
this
were like,
this is a Jack thing.
Oh,
whoa. This is literally just, this was a ghost written Jack Antonoff song. This is a Bleacher song.
Yeah. Good for him.
And for that, well, I mean, good for him, but also I'm upset about that. And I want him to stop doing it because it hurts my feelings. But you know what? That's all we have time for you today on this public episode of Phone a Snake. If you would like the real tea, patreon.com/driftologist, baby. That's where you need to be. Goodbye.